Aloha friends, it's Robert Stelic. Thanks so much for tuning in to the Blue Planet Show. Today's show is extra special. I got to meet with Jimmy Lewis. Derek and Lucas and I visited his workshop in Haiku in Maui, where he showed us his whole workshop, gave us a full tour, showed us his house as well, even gave us t-shirts and signed them. This is the t-shirt he gave me. So that was a super fun trip, and I highly recommend watching this one on YouTube. I'll post it as a podcast as well if you're doing other things, but the visuals are great. He shows us the full tour of his factory, his dust collection system, how to shape a board from basically hot cutting it with a hot wire, cutting the blanks, installing inserts, foil tracks, his philosophy on shaping and how he was inspired by seaplanes when he developed some of the early foil boards, and showed us a hydrodynamic plate mount that he developed for the air chair, and then how to get sharp edges when you're glassing, how to shape a twisted V-tail. So he's not holding back, sharing whatever he knows. So cool of Jimmy to give us all the details. And at the end of the interview, I'll also make some special announcements about the Molokai race, a couple other things. Stay tuned to the very end. Thanks so much for watching. And without further ado, here is Jimmy Lewis.
Tell me again about the design and how you came up with that kind of the...
This guy, Vitor Markow, he's a lifeguard captain on the North Shore now, right? And he's been a lifeguard for as long as I've known him. I've known him for a little over 20 years. And he was one of the first guys foiling when Laird first started foiling and using the boots to bolt themselves onto the board and those air chair foils.
They had like snowboard bindings, right? So they just sit.
And so Vitor was pretty progressive on it to know that he needed to adjust his foot straps sometimes or his bindings. So he had me put these tracks on. And Vitor was really good. He could do jumps and backflips on a wave with that air chair. And he said, yeah, when I jump and I come down for a landing, my board would always stick. And he asked me what kind of shape could I do so it wouldn't stick so much. And the first thing I thought of was a seaplane, because they're made to land on water at a high speed. They're coming in for a landing and they land on water without dragging and flipping over. So I started shaping that, just a seaplane basically. The first few I did, I also had a step at the back, like one of those seaplanes.
Oh yeah, like Derek's boards have that step, yeah?
Yeah. The original foil boards I was doing had that step in the back.
So basically it's a V, like here it's a pretty flat V, and then it becomes more like a double concave V.
Yeah.
Pretty hard rails all the way through, yeah?
Yeah.
Nice. I mean, and what was his feedback on this?
They loved it. He sent me videos of him, and he'd jump, and he'd come down and touch down, and immediately just spring back up onto the foil.
Excellent.
And to me, it just seems to be an obvious design to do on any foil board, because foiling, obviously, the most important thing is getting up on the foil. And then, so takeoffs are important, and coming off the foil and touching down is not good. If you do, wouldn't it be best to have a board with the least amount of resistance when you're touching down? Mm-hmm. And I see a lot of boards with round edges up here. Oh, it's softer and it won't catch. And it's like, bullshit. As soon as it touches down, it's catching at a high speed. When water goes over a rounded surface, it causes drag. That's physics and hydrodynamics. It's not my opinion. That's just what happens with water going over a rounded surface. It drags. And so I've seen pictures of Derek sinking his rail on cutbacks, and there's not even any disturbance in the water because a hard edge, and I don't do my bevels on a real shallow angle. I do them on a steep angle because I want an edge like this touching down. I don't want a big flat surface on a flat bevel touching the water. I want an angle touching like that, and it'll just cut through the water, and the bottom shape will allow it to spring back up a little bit. Better over this whole area down in there. And I put some wax paper, because this is all polyester, right? And then I would just push this down in there. And I would mold all of this, right? All that glass in here. So now this thing fit perfect. But these edges were rounded, and so I put wax paper around this thing in here, and I would just fill up the resin around there to make that hard.
Okay.
Then, after it was done, after I did that, you can see I drilled big holes in here, fill those holes with resin, knowing I'm going to drill a smaller hole through it later, right? To keep it sealed, yeah?
Okay.
And then on the top, because he used flathead screws, I don't know if you can see these darker areas.
Mm-hmm.
You know those, how Angulo used to make phasers with a little... Anyway, I made a drill with a slightly rounded bit like that. I still got it in there, and then I would just go, and I would just sand out a concave, and I'd put about 15 layers of glass in here, and then grind it flush.
Okay.
So it was a big fiberglass washer, basically, right?
Yeah.
So and then he can stick his bolts through there. They'd be flush on the deck, and they'd come through here, and then he would bolt this in there, right? Yeah. And then I shaped this down to fit the V perfectly,
okay.
Which was hard. Have you ever shaped G10? It ain't easy.
Yeah, that's grinding.
Yeah, it's a lot of grinding. But anyway, then I'd route up a small hole here that where the strut would fit. And then the router, I can't do it perfectly, so we'd put that metal thing in there. I'd only do it 3/4 of an inch, too. I'd only do it this deep, right?
Okay.
And then he would tap, I think, 3 bolt holes into the bottom of that strut, and he'd screw the strut in on this side. Right? With flathead screws. Wow. So the strut would be bolted to this. And then I'd put the strut in with wax around it, and I'd fill that up real tight with milled fibers. So it was solid, right? And tight. And then he would bolt this onto the thing. The strut would bolt onto this, and this would bolt onto there. And this would be shaped perfect with the bottom.
So it was basically, the air chair didn't have a plate mount on it, right?
Well, is that what the air chairs, I think, those things were about this tall.
Right.
I don't know if you've ever seen.
So they cut the mast short.
Yeah, they just whacked it off wherever they wanted. And originally, they were just welding on a 1/4 inch or a 3/8 inch piece of steel and then bolting that on the bottom of the board. And Brett Lickle was the first guy to have me route out a hole and put that plate flush with the bottom of the board.
And basically, nowadays we got the plate mounts that sit on top of the board. This would actually be a much more aerodynamic design.
There's nothing in the way.
Because there's no drag from the plate.
Yeah.
Like the tuttle box where the mast goes into the board, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
That's really
smart.
But
do you guys really feel that plate dragging when you're moving?
I think for racing it matters, like when you want to get going,
when you first get going,
you have less drag. And then also, where it's important is if you touch down at high speed,
that's when you have
extra drag.
You actually really feel
you
that.
You feel it, yeah. This is one of your new downwind shapes, right?
It is, but this guy's going to use it for winging. I don't think he's going to do downwind.
So light wind winging. So
I don't know if it's going to be light wind or whatever. He lives in Santa Barbara. But no matter what kind of board I do this bottom shape, if it's a prone foil board, a stand-up foil board for waves, a downwind board, the only difference about a downwind thing is this. On any other board, I would put a kicktail with the V, but for a downwind board, this center line is straight. There's no kick at all, and that's to have a longer, straighter water line will paddle into a swell easier.
It's really cool. So how are you? What it looks like you.
This is going to have that step.
Yeah.
But there's no, this is straight right here. Or in the end, it's going to be straight. See, there's no, this is totally straight here.
This is like Derek's new board is like exactly the same in the tail, right? Or,
He has this step here too, yeah?
I think so.
But the center line here is straight.
So, and then when you sand it, you put a pretty hard edge on here too, right?
Yeah.
On this one.
Yeah. I'll show you how I do it. Anyway, this, I'm still... Sometimes when I shape this, I add a little, but it's pretty straight.
Yeah.
I don't want, after all this is sanded, this might be a little straighter. But the way I do that is I take this piece of paddle shaft and I wrap that plastic around it, and I mask this off here and there, and I'll put this here, and I'll just pour resin in there.
You feel it's hard.
And I'll prop this up a little bit like that. And what I do is I'll mix the epoxy and wait till it starts getting super hot, almost going off, and then I'll start pouring it in there. And then I'll have to keep scooping it as it's gelling to keep it, to get it. So I don't have to do 5 different batches, right? I want to do it in one batch. And I put some putty over here to hold the resin, a reservoir, like that. And then I think I prop it up a little bit.
And then you have to
like
do
that.
I
got to do it for each side. But I got to I mix up the resin and wait about 5 minutes and feel the cup until it starts getting hot. And then I'll pour it in there. And then within a few minutes, 5 minutes, it starts gelling. And then I'm sitting there with the stick shoving it all up in there. And then when I pull this off, this is a perfect radius already. Mm. I don't have to sand it at all because it's this shape.
Right.
And that plastic just pulls off.
Nice.
And then I got that. This is the stuff that we used to close vacuum bags with. And this is the stuff that this will be stuck in place here. And then I'll just take some of this and putty up this edge and make my reservoir here and over here so the resin doesn't pour out the sides.
Yeah.
It's a pain, but
some,
then I'll do it on this side too.
Some glassing secrets from Jimmy Lewis.
Secrets.
Cool.
But I love telling people my secrets.
I like how I guess the carbon, you just lap it and then you cut it right at that sharp edge all the way.
The first layer, I glass the bottom first and tape it off up to here, and then I'll do the I'll paint the colors on. I just paint these on.
Yeah, so these are painted right
onto the carbon.
Onto the carbon. So it's like instead of a hot coat, you just paint.
This is ready for a hot coat now.
Okay.
Actually, I got to do this molding tomorrow.
Yeah.
And after that's molding, then I'll hot coat it. So the next step is hot coat.
Okay. Sorry. So you do the bottom.
Glass the bottom, and then the next. Yeah. And then I'll grind this, and then the next day I'll mask off this, and then the carbon gets wrapped around to here, and it's wrapping around here, and then when it's hard I just grind that down to the tape, pull the tape off, and then see the carbon, and that's the carbon right there,
right
where that carbon was like this. Now it's buttered
up
right
there.
Yeah,
it just ends right on the edge, right?
Yeah.
And then I just strong corner too, and it reinforces the corner.
Yeah, it would be stronger if it was lapped.
Yeah,
and I used to lap it. Then I go, shoot, the boards aren't falling apart. This will be so much easier. And
but the thing is, if you lap it and then you sand it to a sharp edge, then you lose all that material that.
If you grind it there, but see, to be able to glass the first thing, I have to round this edge a tiny bit.
Mm.
But I just do it with a piece of 220 going over at once, just so it's not a sharp edge.
Because
you've glassed something before, right?
Mm-hmm.
You can't glass over a sharp edge. It creates a big bubble like this, especially with carbon. So I just do that. And the thing is, I do a lot of hot coat, and I build this up. I don't actually do a reservoir like I would on a surfboard.
So all these little pinholes and stuff, that gets taken care of in the hot coat, or do you seats?
It'll fill up.
Seal them separately?
I used to.
And yeah, not really pinholes, but I don't know. Yeah, it'll just fill up.
It's not going to fill up white, but it's not going to. It's not going to show.
You just suck on every little thing.
I was curious if pen line went all the way through in that pen hole.
Yeah. Cool.
Another secret I do.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen how sharp I get this? So I'm going to hot coat the bottom, right? Every layer of glass or carbon or resin you put over a sharp edge, it gets rounder. Tomorrow, or the next day, I'm going to hot coat the bottom, and it's going to be all filled in. Then I'll be able to sand it really smooth. I used to baste along here trying to build this up, and I would never be able to get a good sharp edge on it. So now what I do is before I get it ready to hot coat the deck, and I'll tape off around here like this all the way around. When it's upside down, the resin's going to drip down here and form big drips on here. That'll make enough resin on there for me to sand a sharper edge. And then here's the filler thing I do. I'll just mask off this like that.
Oh, so then when the board's upside down.
Yeah.
Oh, that
is good. I'll just paint some resin on there, on here, and I'll paint some resin on this again. I'll double hot. This will already have one hot coat on it, and then I'll paint resin on it again. So it's got two hot coats. This will have resin on it.
But this will be with the board upside down.
Yeah.
So the gravity will make it all swell up in the middle.
Yeah. I'll paint a bunch of resin on there.
Yeah.
Peel that off. This tape stays there. And then I'll flip it over. And then I'll just hot coat the deck. And all this resin runs down the rail and form drips on the rail to make that hard edge, make it easier for me to get a hard edge sanding it. Now the gravity is going to pull all of this resin on that little thing down in, what is it, in a cave they have. The drips coming off of a cave are called stalagmites or stalactites, and the bottom is the other one, right?
Right.
So it makes all these stalagmites or stalactites on the bottom of this edge, and it forms a big old bead there.
Right.
And I can just take my grinder down one side of it and down, holding it on the flat of the V two times or three times, and it's a sharp-ass edge.
Yeah. It's like sharpening a knife.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you, when you sand, do you ever tape off the high points, or you sand one side with tape?
When I do the foam, when I shave.
When you do the foam, yeah.
Yeah, but I don't need to. I'm good with the grinder.
With the grinder, you don't need it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So basically, when you're shaping to get this edge, you put tape on one side.
Yeah.
And then sand this side.
Yeah.
And then
tape
on the
other
side.
When I'm shaping it, I definitely do that.
Yeah.
I'll mask one side.
Keep a nice straight line to you. That's really cool.
But I like to show when sometimes somebody here, if somebody happens to be here, I like to show off how I do that thing with the grinder. Because it's just a matter of taking the grinder on this plane and then on that plane, and it just makes that resin.
What is the dimensions of this board?
I think it's 6'2" and 20 inches wide.
20 inches, okay. Yeah, I think the one you made me was 6'9 by 17.
17 and a half?
Yeah.
17 and a half.
Super. It's narrow, but it's pretty stable.
Yeah.
I know at first you was concerned that it was too thick.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was going to be tippy in the water.
Yeah, but not?
No, it's not.
Yeah, that's
I stand on it because of the length, I believe it's good. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you know who Jim Winneman is?
Yes.
The guy in Victoria, his girlfriend, Victoria, mm-hmm. just got a, how big was it? It might have been, 6 feet and 18.
Oh,
and she's going to stand on it. She's
going
to stand up paddle down.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah, and they took it in the harbor the other day just to see if she could, and she could do it. Wasn't easy, but but it had a kick in the tail, not like this.
Oh, okay. I think that kick, like with that nose, it worked good getting the plane and surfing and stuff like that. But with the big bevel, every time I would hit the white water or turn, the thing would direct, right? So I think if had, like the flat, it would be unreal surfing noise.
Or a kick, you mean? Yeah, this thing touched, right?
Yes, when you touched, they just straight line.
Yeah, this design wasn't...
Yes,
Sid Keeney, my friend on Kauai, got one like this, and he wanted to use it in the surf, too, and he said the same thing Derek said.
Yeah.
But the shape ain't made for surf. And I don't know, I would imagine those Kalama boards would have the same issue in the surf. Wouldn't they be touching back there, too?
I think a lot of them, they just downwind, those guys.
I see a lot of guys' pictures.
Oh, they go surf.
Stuff.
Oh, okay.
And then,
I mean,
yesterday, I'm pretty sure I saw Tomoko over at that peak off where I surf at in Thousand Peaks.
Oh, Thousand, okay, yeah.
And I saw her paddling into a wave, and then I saw her get up. It's really lumbering, though, on this huge board, and then I could see that big tail sticking out.
And
I was thinking, if this shape is touching in the wave, the other ones would too.
Yeah.
But I don't understand why people want me to do this shape on a wave shape or even a wing shape.
Yeah.
But
downwind for sure. Yeah.
That's what it's the reason I kept it straight like this. It was actually Jeff Chang wanted me to do it, but still do that a little bit, and just so there's more glide to catch the swell. It's not the same as catching a wave. Catching a downwind swell is a lot harder.
I think the next one, though, for sure, pulled in like how you have it now, and then with the wave shape in the back. That would be like...
You mean a little kick tail?
You got the other one,
For sure.
Yeah, definitely. But yeah, it feels really good, super stable. Same thing, I thought 17 inches, I grabbed it under my arm going, no way.
I jumped on it.
To paddle it. And then I even took it out winging because we had the Hui race we just entered. And I needed something just in case I came off a foil, something to lay down and paddle.
Yeah.
And it worked great. It was like, it's wonderful. And then when it came into Waimea Bay, the wind stopped. So I came up probably like a third of the way in to the sand.
On the wind.
And I had to paddle and I laid down. And once I laid down, I was like, oh.
Oh, really?
So fast. Yeah, super fast.
Yeah, Jim Winneman got an 8-foot board like this. And I think it might have been 20 or 21.
Okay.
For prone surfing out at, and he had this tail.
Yeah.
And at a point when there's no surf, when it's just little swells that don't even break, he says all these guys on bigger boards are catching the waves, and he has these 4'8" boards, and he's a big guy.
Yeah.
And so he got that board, and he says now he's catching waves better than anybody else, riding the waves all the way through, and the waves don't even break. But the main thing is he's being able to catch something that's not even about to break.
Prepare yourself to get the foil activated and,
yeah.
and then go
So on. That's why I figured this design is as good as that round bottom design. Mm-hmm. And my thing is I do my own thing. I don't like to copy other people's stuff. And if this didn't work, I sent a board to Rob in Australia and he loved it.
Yeah.
Like this. And yeah. if my shape didn't work, then I just wouldn't do a downwinder. Yeah. I don't care too much. I don't
have the other one. Yeah. No, I really, this hard edge is very true. Because even in the beginning, I can feel it just right away. Just
and especially when you come down.
Yeah.
Because I was just thinking about it yesterday, the issue about round rails versus hard rails.
Yeah.
On a stand-up surfboard or a regular surfboard, the board is always in the water.
Yes. Yeah.
And there's a reason to have that round rail, so when you're doing a hard bottom turn, the water holds it.
Oh, yeah.
And the fins back here hold the hard edge in.
Mm-hmm.
But on foil boards, you're moving at a high speed on a foil. When you come down, you don't want the water grabbing.
No friction, yes.
You want it. I was just looking at some of the Facebook pictures I had of you before on a on that carbon board, and you were doing a cutback, and your whole rail was just coming, touching down, and there wasn't any disturbance in the water at all.
Yes,
it was just like cutting right through, no splashing. Right. No big disturbance around the water sucking around. And then a good example of the kind of board that does suck was that video you sent me of the guy on the KT board.
Oh, right, yeah.
And when Derek was asking me to make a double concave once, I go, nah, that ain't no good. I'll do something different. And then he told me, oh, I see what you mean. Look at this video I took of this guy. And the guy came and did a cutback. And then you could see, you know, when you watch a video, I think I talked to you about this on our thing, right?
Yeah.
When you can click on a video and just go frame by frame, and we could see when the board first touched down up in the front like that, the whole back was still out of the water. And then the second frame, you could see all the water rushing around here and the board sucking down even more. The second frame, all the water was just sucking down, and then the guy went flying. It was like he tripped over a wire.
Yeah.
And you'd never really see that unless you did it frame by frame. Exactly what was happening with the water. The board didn't come and skip like that. And then Jeff Chang sent me a video of him. Derek took the video, actually, and he was on his board riding a little wave, and he kept touching down almost the exact same way that KT board was doing. And every time he would skip right back up.
Never penetrated your water.
Yeah, it just bounced right up there.
Yeah, just real right there. It's good. Even and a lot of times winging too, because you can maintain with the sail, I would bring it down and hold it on water, and it would just skip.
Oh, really?
Skip on the surface.
You mean you'd come down and touch down on purpose?
Yeah, on purpose. Yes. Yeah. And it wouldn't suck in and bring you down. It would just be right at the edge, and you could just like you said, no disturbance at all. So.
Yeah. And the stuff I talk about, it's not my opinion. It's physics and hydrodynamics.
Sorry, this is different, but how do you reinforce the fin box?
I get this high density. This foam, and I make a little sandwich like that. Two of them. Originally, I used to use a solid piece of this stuff, but they ran out, and then it's real expensive to buy that 2-inch stuff, thick stuff. And so this is the packing that goes on all my boards, right?
Yes.
And so it just coincidentally, two pieces of 3/4-inch with this in it fits the whole of my jig already that I route.
Mm.
And so I make two of these. Each board I do it custom. If the board's 6 inches thick, I make this about 6 1/4. If it's 5 inches, it's 5 1/4. And then I'll route the hole through the blank before I shape it all the way through. And then I'll just put these together with resin and stuff them through.
Ah, I see.
In the blank.
Yeah. Okay. So then so it's connected to the deck.
Yeah,
box,
like
everything.
It has to be connected to the deck.
Right.
Whether it's a track or a tuttle box, it has to be connected to the first couple I did, one or two track boards I did, I just sunk it in about 2 inches.
And made
like
it
like I used to, like on a windsurfer.
Yeah.
Two pieces, 2 inches deep, like that, built the board, put the fin boxes in, and they all broke almost immediately.
Mm. Yeah.
I think
just
the whole, what do you call it, this reinforcement thing was pulling up. The fin boxes were pulling this out of the board. It has to be connected to the deck. And then after I glass the board, then I just route the holes for the fin boxes and put them in with 4 layers of glass.
Okay, so Jimmy's going to show us how he hot wires this shape of the tail, the twisted V, you call it, right?
Okay, this is we could actually take a piece of foam and do it if you wanted to see it. Or do you want to just hold that on?
Yeah, I'll hold it on.
So imagine this piece of, this is just the board and the foam is like that. These pieces are all taped on so they can't move. How the heck did that get in there like that? Anyway.
Yeah.
And then I just take the hot wire, just follow this. Oh. Yeah, you want to just hold that on there? And then I just go like that, and it cuts like that.
Yeah, so cool. Yeah. Oh, and then when you're twisting the hot wires, like a twisted V.
Yeah, when I just, this is the guide for the middle,
yeah.
And this is the guide over here.
Yeah.
And so it just cuts it. The first one I did for Jeff Chang, I hand-shaped.
Yeah.
Because I drew a line here, kept one on there, and just shaped it off. And I could shape it by hand, but...
That's so interesting, because every surface here is flat.
It's pretty flat, yeah.
But when you look at it, everything was curved, right?
Yeah. So anyway, when I was telling Jim Winneman, it looks like the spiral V, and he just forgot what term I used, and he called it a twisted V. And you remember that band called Twisted Sister?
Yeah.
So I just liked that name, and so I just decided to call this board the Twisted V instead of the Spiral V or whatever. That's where that came from. Twisted
really
V.
Cool. So how many boards do you make right now?
The last 6 months it's been slower than before. Thing is, I've always got one or so going, and I only like to do two or three max at a time, staggered, because I don't like sanding or polishing two boards in a day. And yeah, I got to stagger them, and I don't like having to move boards around on the racks. Mm-hmm. I like to have one board on one rack and not have to move it and shuffle stuff around. And I used to have 4, 5, 6, 8, 10 orders backed up. Now I have one or two max, and I don't care. If I don't have any orders, I'm happy.
Works for you, right?
Yeah.
But you also, probably, like, how many production boards do you sell for every custom you make? Probably.
The last year probably has been slower than at the beginning of the pandemic.
Yeah.
Was killer.
Jimmy's going to give us a little bit of a tour of the factory.
Different sizes and different widths and stuff. And I make templates like this, which is a rocker template and thickness flow template, what I call it. And we got different ones for different size boards and shapes. Mm-hmm. And there's two of these identical. And then we take that, and it's got nail holes on here, you can see. And I'll nail that on the side, and we got to make it real accurate on both sides. And then, like that hot wire I showed you in there, I got the big one right here. Then I hot wire out the blank.
This one runs along the...
Yeah, so I just hold that wire along the edge of this, cut the deck, and then I'll run it along the bottom and cut the bottom.
And this runs at 120 volts?
No. Yeah, you plug it in the wall, but it's got a dimmer switch here, and it's actually on zero.
Oh, okay.
If I turn this up a little bit, the wire starts getting red, and if I turn it up all the way, the wire just explodes.
Oh, yeah.
And it cuts the foam.
And what kind of
Did you see that video of my friend?
Stainless steel?
Yeah, this is just leader wire from, like, fishing.
Oh, leader wire?
Yeah. This stuff.
So this is how you can build your own wire cutter.
Yeah, but you got to learn how to figure... I can't remember how I figured out how to do this. Maybe somebody showed me, but...
Yeah.
Derek saw this switch. This friend of mine in Florida, this hillbilly guy from Tennessee, wanted to make one, and I told him, okay, you got to get that dimmer switch. You cannot plug it directly into the wall.
Yeah, because that lowers the voltage, right?
Because full voltage just burns that wire just immediately.
Right.
So anyway, he had his blank there, and he made a little video. He goes, okay, I'm getting ready to do this. But anyway, he's got the templates taped on this piece of foam, and he put the camera over there, and it shows him plug it in, and the hot wire is just resting on this. As soon as he plugs it in, the wire just turned into flame and sank and cut his blank in half. And the foam was burst into flames too. And he goes, oh, I guess you saw that. I just cut my blank in half. The thing caught on fire. Look, the wire was up there. Daggummit, I just ruined that piece of foam. All that work. Anyway, he told me. Yeah, my friend told me. He couldn't figure out how to get the dimmer switch working. And he said, a friend of mine just said, just try it and plug it right in the wall. And so that's what he did. And he says, I should have put it on the floor, but I posted that on Facebook, and I made the point to say, I'm not making fun of my friend, because all of us this has happened to.
It's a learning.
It's not. Yeah. And then Peter Thoman, this famous windsurfer guy, Andres at Dinking, Mark at SIC, they all commented, yep, I burned a lot of blanks by doing that.
Yeah.
Sometimes I'm just walking along with this thing, and all of a sudden the wire will pop, and I'll have to, if I can pull it off quick enough,
it won't
sink too far into it.
Yeah.
But I've had the wire break in the middle of a cut and sink like a couple blanks into the thing.
Oh. So how often do you have to replace the wire?
Not very often. It could be 6 months it might last. The thing is, the older it gets.
I'm just curious, like, for people who want to make a do-it-yourself, what setting of the dimmer switch is it, like?
Zero. It depends on which dimmer switch. I've had.
So most of the time it's just zero. You leave it on zero.
It depends on which dimmer switch you get. You want to get an expensive one, too. You can't get a cheap one, because if you get a cheap one, even on zero, it's almost on full blast, where it works good with a light bulb, but not with this.
But if you keep it on zero, you can cut with this for a long time
It depends on every dimmer switch is different.
Right.
I used to have dimmer switches where I could put it about halfway up, and I would tune it sometimes. I would turn it up a little if I wanted to go faster, and then if it started getting red, I would just turn it down a little. But this one, this is the latest one I've ever made. If it's not on zero, it blows up.
Maybe get a close up of this brand, Lutron Diva CL. This is the model of the dimmer switch. Biro. Okay.
Just make sure you get one that costs about $40 or $50.
Okay.
That's all.
Yeah, those are the better.
But if you get a $10 or $15 one, I've got a $10 or $15 one, and on zero, it was still bursting, breaking the wire.
Yeah. Doesn't look OSHA approved, but
yeah.
Okay, cool.
Okay, then after we hot wire the blank, I've got actually a blank here. You can see what it looks like. This is what it looks like after it's hot wired. It's got the rocker and everything of the shape.
Yeah.
This one, actually, some of the blocks I get are 3 feet wide, and some of the boards I make are super narrow. And I've got some narrow blocks out there that I usually use for narrower boards. But sometimes I run out of the narrow blocks, and I have to cut a board with a big wide block for a narrow board, and I got a big cutoff. So I saved those and glue them together to not throw these pieces away. But like that red and white board out there.
So when you glue it together, what do you use to glue it together?
Just epoxy and Q-cell.
Q-cell.
Some people use that spray glue or something, but that stuff never quite gets hard, yeah?
Spray glue?
That's it?
I don't know.
Anyway,
it's hard to sand it probably,
yeah? Yeah, I just use cap.
So that's a good way to do it. And do you ever put stringers in your blanks?
Never.
Never?
No. That's asking for trouble.
Yeah.
Because it just makes... This guy that
makes a more rigid spine.
No, it just causes a stress line where the foam is so soft, that's hard, and it's just going to cause a crack there, say if you landed on your knee right there next to the stringer. But we used to sandwich our boards in windsurfing, right?
Right.
Never put a stringer in there. The sandwich creates the stiffness,
mm-hmm.
right? And this one guy, Dennis Parton, would say about some of these other guys, yeah, you put a stringer in a sandwich board, after about 6 months, that stringer's standing proud.
Yeah.
Meaning it's sticking up and the rest of the board is sucking down. And anyway, we got all these templates in here for drawing the templates on.
Yeah.
But anyway, this is the shaping room. And then this is the glassing room out here where we glass the boards. After they're glassed, this room here is where I put the fin boxes
and you said sometimes you have one guy helping you occasionally, or
no,
you're
never
doing everything yourself?
I do everything myself.
Okay.
I've had guys work here before
yeah.
when I was doing lots and lots of boards, but I don't do enough boards to keep anybody employed, and plus I like doing it. And
how long does it take to make a board from
start to finish? About 7 or 8 days. I do one step a day or two steps a day max. Mm-hmm.
How many man hours do you think that is?
I've started keeping track of it one time, but I never finished. I kept track of how long it took me to hot wire the blank and then to put the reinforcement in, shape it, and it don't matter to me.
Right.
I don't know. What would you think?
It's a labor of love. I think,
see,
I don't know, like for production, it's a board can be like 50, 60 hours of labor or something like that. Is that
no way. I would think maybe
the painting, polishing, see, and all that kind of stuff.
Okay, shaping might take me 2 hours. That's 3 hours for that. Glassing might take me another 2 hours max. Putting that stuff in is another hour. Hot coating and glossing, maybe an hour. Sanding is an hour. Polishing, 10 hours.
10 hours.
Maybe 11 hours.
That's pretty good.
Maybe 12. I don't know. It very well could take me longer than I think because I ain't in no hurry anymore. I used to buzz around here pretty quickly, but sometimes I'll just say, I'm only going to do these few things today, and then that's it. But I don't think one of my production boards is, no way, 50 hours.
Yeah.
I can ask Frank and see.
Sounds very less, yeah. Yeah.
And let's see, after...
go ahead. Yeah, after
the shape. After we put all that junk in, that's the sanding room. I grind that stuff down.
Oh,
and then,
can you show the ventilation system? That's pretty cool, how you vacuum.
So air comes out of the ceiling because you need to have it's like a wind tunnel thing. You got to have air coming in from one way or else the vacuum system wouldn't work. So there's a fan right under where you're standing that sucks these two compartments. And you can see, let's see if I can grab some foam.
That's totally custom, yeah?
Yeah, I made it this whole shop. I don't know if you'll be able to
it
see this.
It works so well that there's no dust anywhere.
I sweep up all the time to see.
Oh, yeah, wow. It gets sucked right in. That's really cool.
But this room, if I'm sanding in here, there's never a cloud of dust because it's always... Gravity's pulling it down for one thing, but then the suction is, and when the door's closed, this works a little better. But it works real good.
Yeah,
but I always clean up every room when I'm done, too.
Yeah, so this is sanding and grinding and stuff like that.
Yeah, and I polish in here, too.
Okay.
Nice. Did you get grease? Were you standing?
One time I did, yeah, because it got old. No, just got old.
That's soft.
And this isn't as strong as the original one I had. And I use this weight a lot on boards to hold it down. And sometimes when I'm doing that, it'll slide off and it's landed on that and break it. Anything I drop anymore, like scissors and stuff, I jump. Because I don't want a scissors jabbing my foot and these weights and stuff.
So this is going to be a wing foil board?
Is actually a Jeff Chang's board.
Oh. Yeah,
I don't like it. He wanted me to make a round pin again, and I just ain't into that shape. But
wing footing?
Yeah, it's a wing board, and I'm not sure how this is going to look. It's hard for me to tell until I actually cut it out. But it's going to be this inside line and that inside at the tail, too. But he had a round pin before and said he probably wouldn't get another one. And so did Sid Keeney. Neither one of them liked him.
Huh.
I don't know why he wants me to do another one, but I did. I will.
Okay.
We can give him.
Yeah, if you come out here, you can see. You can see under there. Where's that square? I can't see in the dark, but because of the. But there's the fan, you can see it's in that square thing. And then come down here and you can see. See this tube?
Oh, yeah.
That comes all the way down from the sanding room. And see, when I first built it, it's on a slight angle, mm-hmm. and there was sprinklers inside of it.
Mm-hmm.
And so all the dust was supposed to flow down into here. And then every once in a while I would just, and then it has a little hole there so the water would build up and then flow out.
Mm.
It wouldn't just sit there and be in there.
So
and then I would scoop it out every several years or something. But I cleaned this up about a year or two ago.
Uh-huh.
After all these 30 years, I don't think I'll ever have to do it in my lifetime again.
It's a cool system.
I used to have this whole thing and see, I had these, this whole thing was enclosed.
Yeah, with like fiberglass.
And so I find it's those sticky things that are in the painting room.
Oh.
And the thing is, I took those away long ago, and there's really not a whole lot of dust anywhere. So it's pretty much all just going in there.
That's cool.
When I first made this place, I didn't want to have any ecological footprint anywhere. I wanted to keep it all contained. Oh, yeah. I've got a recycle machine for the acetone too.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
How do you recycle that?
I'll show you. Ed Angulo had one a long time ago, and so when I moved here, when I got this land and stuff, I got one. So I wouldn't be dumping the acetone out in the ground or whatever.
Yeah, so but you can actually reuse the acetone kind of thing?
Yeah. So this is the machine. It's got these plastic bags, and I got a bunch of them up there still. But you dump it in there and put this goes in here, and it heats up. And then I put a 5-gallon bucket down there with a tube that comes out the back that goes here after it's recycled. It fills up the 5-gallon. So I'll put this about 5 gallons of this, of dirty acetone, gives me back about 3.5 clean.
Wow, and then the gunk just
and then that's what's left over. Yeah, gelled. And then I just toss this away. See, it's not totally hard, but then I'll put this in the dumpster.
Wow. That's really cool because then you don't have any liquid to dump or whatever.
Yeah, because
and you basically get way more out of 1 gallon.
I've had this 30 years, it's more than paid for itself 10 times over.
Yeah,
but my main motivation was not having to dump the acetone somewhere. When I used to be over in the cannery there was this rain gutter thing that came down, and then there was a half round galvanized pipe going down into the gulch, and it was going about 15 feet out. I would take my acetone and dump it there. I feel terrible. Just end that thing, and it would flow down, and I don't think much of it made it down the 50 because it would just stop.
Evaporate away.
It wouldn't, but still, it wasn't cool to do that. But right. That's what I was doing back then, and I go, well, I got to do something here.
Yeah.
Rather than dump the acetone in the ground out here somewhere. And I was just thinking recently, I wonder what the other shops are doing with their acetone.
Yeah, everybody should have one of these, or they should have one for the cannery where they can share it or whatever.
Yeah, I know Ed Angulo had one, and these guys, Johnny V and Everett, had one too.
Mm-hmm.
And I know none of those, Ed's not making boards here anymore. There's no way he took that to Florida with him.
Hmm.
And Johnny and Everett aren't making boards anymore. I'm wondering what they did with theirs.
Hmm.
But I was just curious about the other glass shops around. What did they do with their acetone?
In the interview, you were talking about that dominatrix shape, the bottom. Do you have a sample? Oh, is it this red one? Looks like concave with rounded rails. Yeah. Oh,
it was just a name I gave it. But basically, it was a copy of a water ski. All of these boards here are hard edge, flat bottom, twin tips. And then this German guy came by my shop once at the beginning of kiteboarding and said, yeah, you guys, are you doing the same thing the water skiers do? You want to hold a edge at high speed. You do the exact same thing as slalom water skiers. You should try that on a kite board. So I did. A full rounded edge and then a concave down the center. Anyway, after I started doing these boards, I went to one of the trade shows and I went over to the water ski section. And virtually every slalom water ski on the market had this basic shape.
Mm.
Some of them had a bevel there, but they all had a single concave and a bevel or a rounded edge the entire length.
Mm-hmm. And that just helps you hold the edge going up.
It just holds the edge. It's physics. It's physics, like I said. It's gotten my opinion. It's physics. And why would every slalom water skiing is a big thing. And those guys are pretty radical when they're going around those buoys. And I don't think they're just, I think a double concave will be cool. And they don't. They all have the same design because that's what physics requires for them to be able to hold a hard edge at a high speed.
Yeah.
And so that's the only shape I've done since then. And
interesting.
I've even told some of the other kiteboard makers here on Maui, this is killer, and nobody seemed to want to do it.
Huh. Well.
But you remember when Barry Spaniard... He invented the RAF windsurf sail. They did a wing mast for speed trials, and then he wanted to duplicate or mimic that on a regular windsurf sail. So he invented the RAF thing with the battens that would create that kind of shape.
Yeah.
And after he did that, virtually every sail maker on earth did that shape because it was so obvious. And I don't know why nobody else did this shape. I don't know why nobody else does the motorboat bottom seaplane shape that I do. Doesn't matter to me.
Yeah. It's funny how people, there's like certain trends and people following what everyone else is doing, or like, and then 5 years later, everybody's using something completely different because the trend isn't, it's not trendy anymore.
Yeah.
But it seems like you don't really follow that. Yeah.
No, I don't think I've invented anything. I've looked at existing designs that people over the decades have done on whether it's airplanes, boats, and then I just apply it to the surfboards and stuff. And all my surfboard shapes, I looked at Dick Brewer's and Jerry Lopez's when I first started shaping.
Sure.
Those guys had it down. And they weren't doing gimmicks. They just had the cleanest lines, the best flow and blend ever.
Yeah.
And I always just stick to the basics. And
those old pipeline guns are still really good shapes, actually.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. My board got dinged on the way over. I was going to show it to Jimmy and then realized there's a crack on the nose. And he's like, let me fix that for you.
No, you said, hey, will you fix it for me? I didn't offer. I don't fix stinking dings. I just happen to have some resin that I've just mixed up. Yeah,
resin kicking off on another board. I really appreciate it.
And I'm going to show you this cool poor man's plastic thing that I put on Robert.
Okay.
That'll
quick ding repair with Jimmy Lewis. Watch and learn.
Okay, now, have you ever seen this stuff, painter's plastic?
Yeah, built in plastic, yeah.
Yeah. And this plastic is a little flexible too, scratches, yeah. Which makes it easier to do what you want to do. You can pull all the wrinkles out. But you know the trick. You got to put your mouth on it and suck on it to see if it's leaking.
Air was coming out when you tested.
Yeah, definitely a ton. And it's, I remember that cool video you did of a downwind paddle, and you were on the board showing how the glides work and talking the whole time. That was the most informative, cool video I ever saw about that, because you were telling all the facts about how boards work, and you were talking about some guys like a narrower board because they think it'll get the glide quicker. And then other people have a wider board because it'll plane quicker. Which one is better? All the downwinder I've seen, 14-foot boards and 16-foot boards on Maui, are flat bottom, hard rail, V-bottom in the back, planing hulls. Hardly anybody rode displacement hull boards like this on downwinders on Maui or anywhere, really.
And I remember for a while, there was a lot of experimenting on where people tried to put a kind of displacement pointy nose in the front and then have a tailing, a planing tail in the back with hard edges and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But basically what happens if you put that displacement nose in the front, it makes the water go around the board.
Yeah, and well, it sticks
planing,
to it.
For planing, you want the water to go under the board and create lift, right?
Yeah.
So you don't want to displace the water in the front because then it screws up the tail.
On a sailboat, they want the water touching the front of the sailboat and wrapping all the way around and not making a disturbance in the water and cutting through it. But we want to take off. You guys, I don't sail, but you guys want to take off. It's not like any of those boards are not working. Everybody and their uncle is riding a Kalama board. They just, that's their thing.
Mm.
All right, if you're still sticking around here, still listening, still watching, you're the ones I'm making this show for. So thanks for being hardcore listeners. I know I can't get enough information about this sport, and so I just always enjoy talking. I love doing these interviews, and I love sharing it with everyone. Please make sure you leave some comments down below if you have any questions or comments or suggestions. I always appreciate that. And I have a couple special announcements. First of all, I just talked to the Molokai Tuahu race organizers, and there's some really exciting developments going on. Nothing's really 100% finalized yet, but it looks like they're going to hold the traditional paddleboard world championship race on July 28th, which is for prone paddlers and stand-up paddlers only this time. So it's going to be just a paddle race, and then they're separating the full race into a separate event, probably on the Sunday before. And that one's going to be for stand-up paddle foilers and wing foilers. So there's going to be a separate race from Molokai to Oahu, and most likely they're going to finish at a better place than Mauna Loa Bay, where you have to go upwind at the end. An easier finish for the foilers, probably either at the Kaimana Windsock or possibly Diamond Head, which I think would be ideal. Hopefully we'll have a better course for foiling, and it'll be a super exciting separate race just for the foilers. And last year we did the Maui to Molokai race on a Friday, and then the Molokai Holokai race on a Saturday. And then the following day we winged from Molokai back to Oahu. And this year that section, probably that Sunday, hopefully it'll be on that day, the 1 week before the paddleboard race. So there's going to be basically three foil races in a row that you can compete in, which I think is super cool. It's like the triple crown of foiling. So I'm excited that's coming up. And I'm planning to do not only the foil, wing foil race, the three wing foil races on the weekend before, but then also do the traditional paddleboard world championship race on a Blue Planet bump rider, 14-foot board, stock division, stand-up paddling, which I haven't done in several years. So getting back into that, kind of getting back to the roots. Still love to stand up paddle, and the downwinders, it feels like surfing on the wave. So it's a little bit different than foiling, not as fast, but it's a great workout. And I just feel it motivates me to train and become a better athlete, all-around athlete. So stoked to be able to do both races. And I think you'll see a lot of the top athletes like James Casey and guys like that, that are good at everything. They're going to probably do both the foil races and the regular traditional stand-up paddle race. I think that's super exciting news. And then something else I just wanted to let people know about is I signed a contract and I started writing a book. It's titled Stand-Up Paddling for Dummies. And so far the process has been really good. Just writing a book that's going to be for a broader audience, getting people into water sports, getting people to just live better lives, I hope, and get people into water sports. So I'm probably going to spend a little bit more time doing that versus putting out a lot of Blue Planet shows. They are very time consuming to produce, but we will continue to post a new video on the Blue Planet Surf YouTube channel every week, every Saturday. And I am planning to bring out more shows, but I just wanted to let you know I am going to be busy with other things as well, so I probably won't have as much time to produce a lot of Blue Planet shows this year until October. Once I have the book done, then I'll try to put out more shows again as well. But for now, thanks so much for watching. Thanks for supporting Blue Planet. If you're looking for a Jimmy Lewis board, we have them at our Blue Planet locations. We have one in Haleiwa, a shop in Haleiwa by the Rainbow Bridge, and then one in town on Kona Street. Both locations, we have the Jimmy Lewis boards as well as many other great deals. Right now we have wings on sale for half price. So you can get our Alien wings or Ozone wings, half price, what we have in stock. Great deals available, and lots of Jimmy Lewis boards you can choose from. So check it out. Thanks so much for watching again. See you on the water. Aloha.